Now back to the Barnabas Health High School football show, live from the Water Street Bar and Grill in Toms River, powered by Community, Kimball, and Monmouth Medical Centers. Classic rock for the Jersey Shore. 105.7 The Hawk and 105.7thehawk.com.
And welcome back to the Water Street Grill. Some people watching the Rutgers game, right? The Scarlet Knights up on Louisville 7-0. Good NFL game tonight as well. Falcons-Saints about a half an hour from now. But we're talking our own version of college football. Monmouth University Hawks finished up their season on an up note and closed out with a 5-5 record. One game not played due to the hurricane, good to close that season on a winning note, and we're delighted to be joined by the, how about this, the 20-year head coach.
That makes me sound old.
Yeah, it does. At Monmouth, Coach Kevin Callahan joins us each week via the phone. We asked him to come down tonight and chat a little bit about the state of the program and what goes on this time of year. Coach, good to see you.
Great to be here, guys. Appreciate it.
I know winning that last game always feels a lot better than losing that last game.
It does for a lot of reasons. You know, first and foremost, you like it for your seniors, the guys who are playing their last game for your program, the guys who are going to be leaving, and they certainly want to leave with a good memory and a good taste in their mouth. And, you know, if you could have been out there, well, Matt, you were out there and saw the emotion and the energy that our kids played with that day. It was impressive, and it was a game where we jumped out to a fairly significant lead early on, 17-0. Robert Morris came back and made it a game, and in the end was crazy, to be honest with you. I think we replayed the final play twice, and we were almost ready to replay it a third time before the officials came to their senses, and we walked off the field victorious. But in addition to the what it does for our seniors and how they leave the program, a lot for the underclassmen, the guys who will be coming back and make up the core of next year's team. It really gets them motivated to start for the 2013 season.
Coach, when you think about this year and reflect back on it now with a couple weeks removed, 5-5, it was probably a bit of a disappointment, but in 20 years of Monmouth football, where does this season kind of settle into the whole mix? I mean, there's been good years, there's been bad years, and there's been years like this one where you're 500, but again, maybe not what people, yourself included, expected going into this year. So as you think back on it, like how does the year stack in the annals of Monmouth history in a way?
Great question. I think that, you know, everybody within the program, players, coaches, and people that are familiar with the program, thought heading into 2012 that we had an opportunity to make a run at the championship. We were an older team. We had a fair amount of experience. We had players in positions that had been there before, used to making plays. Although we maybe weren't quite as deep as we would like to be heading into a season, I think we had all the pieces in place to make a run. I think heading into it, in my mind, we were finishing first. And I think, but that's my mindset every single season, going back to 1993. Right. To finish in third place with a win over the team that won the championship and a loss to the team that finished second, I think we're all disappointed in that. And, you know, we had hoped for something better. But what I saw this year, and we're probably right in the middle of a five-year transitional period. If you go back 5 years or 3 years, 2.5 years, we significantly changed our schedule and who we played and made a drastic move to elevate the program. You know, I, for one, thought it was going to take a much steeper rise as we went through it, and maybe I was a little ambitious in thinking that. You know, no longer are we playing Iona, St. Peter's, and schools like that. We're playing Old Dominions and Coastal Carolinas and Delawares and Maines and Rhode Islands and people like that. And that makes a little bit of a difference. And, you know, when you look at it at the end of the season, like I do every year, and you analyze everything that goes into your operation, from how you practice to what you do in practice to how long you practice to what you wear to what you do on Fridays, Saturdays, all of those things, your coaching staff, everything, you evaluate where you think we're on track and where you think we need to make adjustments. At the end of last season, yeah, going into the winter, we made a tremendous amount of adjustments. We changed literally our schematically on offense was completely changed. Significantly, we changed the schematics on defense. We changed coaching responsibilities a great deal on the defensive side. We changed our Friday night operation, our game day operation. I think there's still some changes that need to be made, but I think we're on the right track. If you look at some of the areas, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, where I felt weren't where they needed to be at the end of 2011. We've closed the gap on a lot of those. Probably over 50% of the areas that I identified in my year-end annual report that we needed to do a better job with, and 50% of them, we saw significant improvement heading into this year. We're not all the way where we need to be, but I'm really excited moving forward. Last year, we brought in what I feel is a tremendous freshman class. It was a class that was focused on adding depth to the defensive side of the ball. We successfully did that in recruitment, but as you know, Ed, you don't always see the yield from that recruiting class that comes in August. You don't see it in September.
Right.
But I'm excited about that. We're currently involved in recruiting a number of, I think, very talented players, many of them right here from the Shore Conference, who are going to add to that depth, and I'm excited. I can't wait to get going moving forward.
Coach, players are resilient. You know, they seem to take wins and losses, you know, like they're going to class and they're not going to class, you know. Coaches are not. What about this bunch? Who takes it harder, the 5-5 season? Coaches? I mean, do they coaches never absorb losses. You know what I'm saying?
I think without a doubt.
Yeah.
And you know, as having been a coach, Ed, that the losses always seem to stay with you
exactly.
a little bit longer than the wins do.
That was my point, yeah.
You know, you have a win, you move on, you get ready for the next game.
Yep.
2 years from now, somebody's going to say, remember that win.
Yeah.
And I remember probably every game we played in 20 years. But it's sometimes the losses that hang with you a little
right.
bit more. And I think that goes in – what goes into that is the hours of preparation leading up to that game.
Right.
And then when you don't get the result that you had hoped for going into it, you look back and you're searching for ways that why didn't we get that result? Or if you get a win, say, hey, that happened how we were supposed to. It was happened the way it was supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to the next one.
Yeah.
5-5, now that you look back, what should you have been?
In my mind?
Yeah.
I go into every year, Kevin, saying we're going to be 11-0. I don't go into a ball game every year and say that's a loss on the schedule. I think that every game we go into, we have the ability to win. I don't care who we're playing. I don't care who's playing for us. If we were to go out and play Notre Dame right now, I would tell you we're going to win the game.
You watching what he's drinking?
You gotta feel that way.
Well, I understand you feel that way, but knowing that now that you can have the ability to look back, of the five losses, I'm not saying going in, how many of those games should you have won that you did? Let's put it this way. How many of those did you think you kind of let slip away? Making him think a little now.
Three.
Okay.
I think, you know, we look at it, the Bryant game that we played at home was a game that, you know, we actually had the lead with 4 minutes to go. We have the unfortunate tip pass that they intercept on the 10 or 12-yard line going in. They score the winning touchdown on that play. That's a game that I think, you know, we had started slow. We fought our way back into it. We put ourselves in a position to win, and then we didn't. I think up at Cornell, a game that was kind of a shootout, a wild game. Again, we had a slow start. We got ourselves right back into it and weren't able to finish it off when we had an opportunity to close it out and make it a game. And then the other game, I look at the Lehigh game, the opening game of the season. Did not have a great first half, dominated the second, third, and fourth quarters, had two possessions in the red zone in the fourth quarter, didn't convert those two to points, and ended up losing a three-point game.
Coach, when you think ahead a little bit, you know, you just stated you can't wait to start already for next season. And with a lot of guys graduating from this year's team, I know there's obviously holes to fill, but it happens to be the one spot that everyone pays the most attention to. It's quarterback. I mean, you've had
right.
basically a four-year starter with Kyle Frazier. And I think this year, unlike maybe other teams or other year, there is no heir apparent necessarily. I mean, there's other guys in the mix. But for the first time in a long time, you're going to have a real quarterback competition in the spring.
And you know what? You're absolutely right, and I think that's outstanding. The fact that we're going to have that level of competition heading into spring ball. You know, Kyle Frazier did a tremendous job for us. I can't say enough about the player he was for us, the type of person he was, the leader he was. And really, I think our team responded to him in a very, very positive way. Our backup quarterback this year was also a fifth-year senior,
mm-hmm.
and you usually don't find yourself in that position. It's usually maybe a junior or a sophomore, and I think that's what you're referring to, Matt. We do have a junior, a sophomore, and two freshmen in the program. all of whom I think are extremely talented guys. And I can't wait to see who kind of emerges from that group as our guy.
As far as players coming back, what side of the football do we have to really emphasize as far as recruiting, offense or defense, this year?
Well, I think we still need to continue to build that depth on the defensive side that I was referring to before. You know, at the end of 2011, we realized that we really lacked a lot of depth. We made up for some of that depth. And as you saw, freshmen on the field playing this year. Joe Johnson, a true freshman, played significant number of plays this year. Demetrius Smith, a true freshman, played significant number of plays. Many of the other guys were sophomores that were playing. So we still need to get more defensive players, particularly in the defensive secondary. We would like to enhance our defensive line through recruitment as well. But you can't ignore the offensive side. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I think that's the trick to the recruiting is getting a large amount of talented players who can affect your depth. You don't want to get into a teeter-totter approach where you do defense this year, then you're lacking on offense and do offense next year and go back and forth. And I think that is what we found, the situation we found ourselves in a year ago a little bit. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, with the level of the talent of our freshman defensive players, I think we've made up and made some strides in securing that depth. We've got a little bit more that we've got to take care of. And we can't ignore the offensive side as well. You know, we are graduating six starters on defense, or five starters, six players over. I mean, on offense. Kyle Frazier, as you mentioned, Matt, is significant there. Our tight end, Tyler George, receiver, Tristan Roberts. Two of our five offensive linemen will be leaving. You know, on the defensive line, we lose two interior guys, and Chris Luma and Mike Upham. We lose a defensive end, Brad Harris. We lose one linebacker in Bill Louch. We lose a corner in Reggie Hildebrand and Elijah Phillips, the other corner. Other than that, everybody's back.
All right, let's get away for a second. We're talking with Monmouth University head coach Kevin Callahan, just finished up his 20th season with the Hawks. Going away from the stuff on the field, what are some of the things in the program itself that you'd like to see improved? I know one of the things we always talk about is scholarships. Where are you at scholarship-wise? Where would you like to go? Facility-wise, the things that may also help you bring in a better players down the road.
Right. Well, we're on track. We have a plan in place. Our athletics director, Dr. Merrill McNeil, has a plan in place to increase scholarships as we move forward, not only get us up to the max allowed by the Northeast Conference, but also beyond that max. That plan will begin to be implemented with this recruiting class right now. So we're on track to get that going there. There's also plans in place to enhance the facility as well. So I think we're taking the strides that we need to take in those areas. I like what I'm hearing. I like what I'm seeing. And so we are moving forward in those areas.
How important are those things?
They're critically important. I mean, a young man today, I mean, if you are – forget what a recruit is looking for. If you look at any football program, I think the critical areas are staffing, scholarships, resources in terms of budgets and operations, and facilities. And if you are at the top of your group or your conference in those areas, you are going to be successful.
How important, again, kind of off kilter a little bit, we're smack dab in the middle of stuff, how important for the league, the NEC, which will kind of take a dramatic change between this year and next year. Rhode Island was supposed to come in. They're not. Albany's leaving to go to the CAA. But Wagner was able to win a football game for themselves, obviously, but in the big picture, for the league, too.
Right.
The team you beat, by the way. The team you beat handily.
I got to give a lot of credit to what Walt Hamline and the team up at Wagner College has done. They had since we beat them on Staten Island, they won eight consecutive games to close the season. They were winless after our game. They went into the playoffs and had a very, very convincing first-round win over the Patriot League champion in Colgate. I think that makes a statement as to where Northeast Conference football is on the national scale. I think it says a lot about how the Northeast Conference can compete once you get into the playoffs of the FCS.
When you look at that, just as a quick follow-up, I mean, with only now eight teams in the league and so much conference realignment at every level, does the NEC have any plans of bringing somebody in, or is Monmouth entertaining thoughts of going somewhere else?
Well, I think from a, not to speak for Commissioner Morris and the NEC, but I think the NEC is always looking to strengthen themselves as a league, as a conference, and in particular in football. We do have eight teams remaining in the conference, and you would like to get at least one more so that you could have eight conference games every year, or maybe two more after that. I think Monmouth as a university has to look at what's best for all of our athletic programs. Certainly football is an important part of that, but as our baseball, track, basketball, soccer, and all of our other programs. So I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I think it's a little bit of both. The university is looking to strengthen their position the best that they can. The league is looking to strengthen their position in the best way that they can. You know, we are going through a big scheduling phase right now. As a matter of fact, I was on the today. We confirmed a deal with Liberty, the Big South champion, who we will play at Liberty next year. They will come back to West Long Branch the following year. We're very close to making a deal with Appalachian State to go down there and play in Boone, North Carolina within the next 2 years. And we're also talking with William and Mary about getting a deal going there. So, you know, you add those to the Lehigh, who's already re-upped for another 2 years with us. Cornell and Columbia are both on the schedule for next year, and Columbia's on for the year after that as well. Things are really starting to come together with a quality schedule.
We're not going to the Big East, I guess. I mean, is the long and short of that. They seem to be looking for just about anybody they can
if there is going to be a Big East.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, I just want to go on record as saying that it was a complete injustice that Kyle Frazier didn't make one of the teams. What were they thinking? And
the All-NEC team.
Talking about the All-NEC teams.
I can only say that I was extremely surprised that he wasn't represented there
exactly.
In some way. Certainly we nominate him, and you're allowed to nominate your own players but not vote for any of your own players when you do rank the team. With where he was statistically, he was clearly at the head of the pack
exactly.
Among quarterbacks, among total offense, in all of the those statistical categories, and to not be represented was surprising. I felt bad for Kyle.
Felt bad for him, exactly.
I thought he deserved to be
exactly.
There.
Exactly. Yeah.
That great year. Coach, real quick and wrapping it up, where you're at this time of year, I know you told us before, you're meeting with players, seniors, thanking them for their contributions, the underclassmen probably giving them a little assessment on what you thought, what they need to do to get to the next level, and I'm sure your off-season program is already underway.
It is underway. And the other thing that I do when I meet with the seniors and all the players in our program, I don't just ask them, I don't just tell them what I thought. I ask them what they think.
Sure.
You know, is they're leaving, what they would like to see change, how they could see the program be better. Because I think as an athlete being in the program for 4 years, you have the right to have some input and say, hey, I'd like to see us do this. Now, we may not do everything that they suggest, but I think you've got to be open to that information and use that input to make the program better moving forward.
Well, it's an exciting time. I know for the fans, they don't realize that this is really when you build your program for next year. You're heavily into the recruiting stage between now and February when you'll announce your recruits. Kids getting their off-season programs. What's that line? Only in the dictionary does success come before winning. So you gotta kind of put it in now. So we appreciate you coming down. We as always look forward to it. I think a big upgrade you could make next year was trying to get the little guy better in the PA booth. I thought he kind of hurt you all year long, but we'll see what happens.
Hey guys, I just want to say that I appreciate all that you've done and having us at Monmouth University represent on the show each and every week, and it's certainly been a pleasure.
It's a lot of fun, Coach. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
Monmouth Coach Kevin Callahan getting ready for season number 21. We'll get ready for Scott Stump. As a matter of fact, I think we got him on right now. So let's say hello to the Stumper as we get set for semifinal weekend in the state playoffs. Scott, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Excited about this weekend. It's always a lot of fun.
I'm going to throw you right into the fire. I am going to be the one guy to pick Red Bank Catholic to win. And all kidding aside, you know, we know what they're up against, but what does Red Bank Catholic have to do to knock off St. Joe's of Montvale?
Well, I think a couple of things. One, they have to win up front. They have a great offensive and defensive line, and those kids are going to have to play their best game of the year because they're going to have to move some people to be able to get that running game going against that defense. And I think they're also going to have to get a good pass rush. You can't let Spencer Alkamp sit back there and throw, or you're going to be in a lot of trouble because they have some big-time skill players. So I think those two things are big, and I also think, you know, you can't panic. But RBCs, they don't really trail in any games. You know, they're never down on the scoreboard. So if that does happen, you have to keep it together and not be overwhelmed by the atmosphere. But I think what gives them a shot is how big and physical they are up front. I thought for years that was the reason why they couldn't compete, because they would just get killed at the line of scrimmage. But I think they can get a stalemate and maybe a little better there. So it comes down to how well their skill players play. You know, I think their quarterback, Pat Toomey, is going to have to make some big throws to move the chains, because you're not just going to line up and run over them. I mean, if Don Bosco Press can't do it, it's going to be a tall order for RBC, but I don't see it as totally far-fetched. Was I as gutsy as you as picking RBC, my alma mater? No, I picked St. Joe's, but we'll see what happens.
Scott, do we foresee a all-shore matchup with Long Branch versus Neptune and Shore versus Beach?
I'm pretty confident in the Shore versus Beach matchup. I mean, Shore's already beaten Asbury Park pretty handily once, and Beach is just a tremendous, tremendous team. I know Florence is a quality playoff team, but I feel confident in that happening. I did, before the playoffs started, I picked Neptune over Long Branch in the Central 3 final. And I'm sticking by that, although, yeah, I think that's going to be a little bit more in doubt. The game I'm more, I think Long Branch is going to handle Nottingham. I just think that the game that I think is going to be really tough is Neptune at Allentown. It's kind of crazy just to even say that. I mean, two or three years ago, Allentown had never even made the state playoffs. And now they're the number one seed and a team that, you know, genuinely seems like it's going to be a regular contender. But the thing that scares me is Neptune is kind of flaked. You know, one game, your jaw drops going, wow, you can't stop these guys. I mean, Keith Kirkwood and Jeff Fairbanks and Patterson throwing the ball. And then they have other games where they look completely lost and you wonder what happened. So depends on the kind of team that's going to show up there Friday night, but they're the defending champs, and you know they're not going out without a fight. And with the kind of speed they have and the kind of game-changing ability they have, if they can protect Patterson and he has time to throw, I think they'll be okay.
Scott, what do you make of the rematch game between Middletown South and Colts Neck?
Yeah, I mean, I looked at that, and clearly, you know, Middletown South is not an easy team to put away two times in one season, although it has been done in recent years by Freehold Borough. Some others, but I, from what I've seen of Colts Neck, they're just a complete team. You know, they're difficult to defend because Anthony Gargiulo running the ball and then Mike Campbell throwing it to Tim Vangelis and others, that they're tough to really focus on stopping one aspect of their offense. And I think their group of linebackers might be the best group or one of the best groups that I've seen all year. So I think Middletown South, if they take care of the ball better, you know, I think they really hurt themselves with some turnovers deep in the red zone in the first game. But I don't know. I picked Colts Neck to make this final before the playoffs started, and I'm sticking by that.
As you look at the 11 teams from the Shore that are left, and, you know, we did mention there are, you know, there's a couple of all-shore matchups. Who do you believe of the 11 is still playing next weekend?
Shore and Point Beach, right off the bat. Long Branch, and Colts Neck. I think the only real ones, the tricky games, I picked Lacey, but Kingsway's a little scary for a 6-seed. I mean, they have 2,000-yard rushers, and Lacey's a team that's given up a lot on the ground this year against teams like Toms River South and others, so that could be a little bit of a dicey matchup in that game. And I think Southern has a legitimate chance to go on the road and beat Eastern. You know, if they can run the ball effectively, keep it away from Flacco and that offense. And Southern secondary is pretty good with Mike Gesicki and Luke Sheehan. You know, they have 10 interceptions between the two of them. I think it comes down to, can Southern get a pass rush on Flacco, force him to throw under duress and maybe make some mistakes, and can they run the ball effectively with Gonzalez and then go up top on play action from Higgins to Gesicki? But I think it's not crazy to have every Shore team win, but to have, you know, seven or eight Shore teams and then, you know, RBC is the heavy underdog. But I could see a scenario where every other your team playing.
You left out one, Scott.
Left out who?
Manalapan. Well, I think they're a pretty sure shot.
Oh, yeah. I picked Manalapan to win that bracket. I'll be honest.
Exactly.
I think if they don't win the whole thing, that's a disappointment. They're the best team in that bracket. And
exactly.
To me, they should – you know, once Sayreville got out of their way and was realigned into another bracket, I was thinking this is wide open for them to take it.
I hope the state makes it easy on all of us, right, covering these games next week. By putting
I'm going to be doing some broadcast work for Verizon Fios at certain games on Friday night, so I'm praying to God those are either sure games or they don't conflict with anything. So,
right.
You know, we'll see. But you're right. That becomes the hardest thing. The more brackets is the more games you have to figure out a way to get to all of them.
Yes.
That is Scott Stump from All Shore Media and, of course, ShoreSportsNetwork.com. Scott, we look forward to chatting with you next week as we preview the state finals. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
Okay.
Wonder where he's going. I didn't ask him.
I would think he would go to RBC tomorrow night, wouldn't you? No, maybe not.
No, I don't think so. I think he might. Yeah. I don't know where he's going. Yeah, we'll see.
Well, that pretty much takes us till 8:30, fellas. So we want to thank our guests tonight. Always good chatting with Monmouth coach Kevin Callahan. Wish him well in the offseason and his program. Of course, Scott Stump, as always. A couple of Lacey Lions, Dylan Walsh and Tommy Kelly. And, of course, Dan Higgins, the quarterback from Southern Regional.
So, all good guests tonight.
All good guests. We'll be back next Thursday night. It'll be our last time here at the Water Street Grill, our favorite place in town. Thanks to Tom Tremblay for taking care of everything here. Phil Harding, as always, for his great job back at the studios. For my broadcasting colleagues, Matt Harmon and Ed Sarluk, I'm Kevin Williams wishing you a good Thursday evening. You've been listening to the Barnabas Health High School Football Show on 105.7 The Hawk.
The Barnabas Health High School Football Show, live from the Water Street Bar and Grill in Toms River on 105.7 The Hawk, was powered by Community Kimball and Monmouth Medical Centers. Join us again next week. Get a complete look at Shore Conference football. And for more anytime, log on to ShoreSportsNetwork.com.